Hello, everyone. This is the Around the League podcast from UGASports.com. I am Dane Young alongside Hall of Famer Jim Donnan and Brent Rollins from Pro Football Focus. Guys, we always start our shows with accountability from the week before. Only three SEC games last week, and we all picked them correctly. 3-0. So, Coach, you're back on the winning side of things after a 1-2 the previous week.
Yeah, hard to miss that, but I think my pick about Terry Wilson was pretty good too, wasn't it?
Yeah, bold predictions were good for you, not for me and Brent. So you said Terry Wilson would have two touchdown passes. Terry Wilson had exactly two touchdown passes. So good job from the coach. It's like you know a thing or two about football.
Well, I mean, I felt like their offense needed to get going. I was really surprised Vanderbilt moved the ball on them like that. But it was an emotional game, as we talked about, with the death of their O-line coach. And, you know, it was a hard week for them, but it's good to get back on the winning side for Kentucky. And Vanderbilt, you know, nothing about moral victories, but they played them tough.
Brent, you and I are not so fortunate with our bold predictions. And I'll say, we're being pretty bold with the predictions we offer each week, and I guess we're not being tepid with them. You said that Arkansas would play Florida tighter than Georgia did. Point differentials, Georgia lost to Florida by 16 points. Arkansas lost by 28. I thought at the beginning of that game, though, that it was going to be tighter than that.
I will say this. It was this close to being – a very tight game. Like, look at the first drive that Florida had. Now, granted, first drive of the game, but they had, I think it was 12, 13 plays at least, half the quarter. They converted a third and long in a tight window throw. They converted a fourth down run from Trask. Arkansas had a fourth and one where they threw a short ball when the deep ball was wide open down the sideline. So there was a few little third, fourth down plays early in the first half of that game that where if they go a different way, they go Arkansas's way, it's a completely different game. But Florida obviously took advantage. They made the plays, and then they just put the foot on the gas and finished them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the theme of college football is that can you score with your opponent? And against a team like Florida, that becomes difficult if you're not able to stop them at some point. And my prediction came from the same game. I said that Arkansas would win the turnover margin by two but still lose the game. Got the second part of that right, but the turnover margin was tied. It was one each. So my bold prediction is not as good as our picks. Total standings in the picks, I am 18-6 for the SEC season. Brent is 17-7. And Coach, you're 15-9, but redemption is always a week away. That's what some coaches have always told me.
Hey, and we got six games this week. That's what I'm talking about.
We're not picking them all, but we do have six games. It was really hard to pick a marquee game, so we're just going to kind of touch each one of them. And what I want to start with is two teams, I think, heading in the opposite directions. Let's start with Tennessee and Auburn. The Volunteers really trying to find some momentum, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But, Coach, every time we've seen Auburn recently, it looks like that they're beginning to gain the confidence that you can kind of see with Gus Malzahn teams, at least in his tenure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just don't want to have fool's gold here. I mean, with the teams that they beat, you got to keep in mind that they lost to South Carolina too and got exploited by Georgia in their secondary. Now everybody's talking about their secondary so good. You know, but I think the big thing with Auburn is how they're going to handle, kind of like Florida with the 2 weeks off, how they're going to handle coming back. And, you know, from the standpoint of a Tennessee team, it's been off a week too and had a chance to really look in the mirror and see what they got to do offensively. I mean, probably going to make some kind of quarterback change, but you never know. But both these teams are, you know, Dr. Jekyll, as far as I'm concerned, Mr. Hyde the next week. So, but the last time they played down there, Jeremy Pruitt was in Gus's head. They just did a great job defensively against them. But they're running a little bit different offense now under Chad Morris. And Chad's come out and said he knows the players now. After 9 months, he knows them. So he's gonna that makes a difference for him. I mean, I thought that was pretty unbelievable to make that statement. But what have they been doing all these this last 9 months? But I'm glad he's got to know them, and we'll see what happens.
That's my favorite Auburn statement since Gus Malzahn before the Arkansas game said that the difference in Arkansas this year is that they're a well-coached team. And I'm like, well, their old head coach is right beside you, Gus.
Standing right beside you.
Brent, if you're Tennessee, what do you do? If I make you Jim Chaney, how are you trying to gain some yards? Because with that offensive line, it just seems like it should be easier.
Well, they're in such a predicament because from a seasonal standpoint they thought they'd be, you know, on a much more positive train, and it's you're playing with a quarterback who's, you know, fifth year senior, and it hasn't really given you any of the production that you thought you might get from that position. So their starting quarterback is, again, much like South Carolina's was last week, or is starting a quarterback for Tennessee this week. And it could be one of three names. Who knows, in terms of, and they haven't really announced that yet, but, and obviously in this game, you look at who do you trust that quarterback more? You trust Bo Nix more than you trust whoever Tennessee puts at quarterback. But the biggest thing for me with this game is how interesting would, and this game would be interesting because of the, like the layoff that Coach talked about, but how interesting would Auburn be right now? Yes, they haven't sort of dominated their opponents and they've struggled in victory, but if they were 5-1 right now and they had not been beaten by South Carolina, you look at the next 2 weeks, or, you know, they go to Tennessee, or they, if they get this victory against Tennessee, 6-1 going into, you know, against Bama and the Texas A&M right after that, they could be very interesting and sort of feeling good about themselves and say, hey, we can make a playoff run kind of thing. But one little slip up early in the year kind of changed that dynamic for them. But can they keep that positive momentum that they got? Can Bo look like the completely different quarterback like he looked against LSU? Which obviously we've seen quarterbacks look a little better against LSU than they have against other competitions. So which quarterback plays the better? Which quarterback plays for Tennessee? Do they actually take care of the football? That'll be the ultimate determining factor in this game.
Yeah, around Athens, we've been talking about the value of playing the last few games. There's a small minority portion of the fan base that doesn't see value in playing more, which is kind of ridiculous. I think in all of our minds, Bo Nix is a guy in particular they can use these last few games for Auburn mm-hmm. and whatever bowl season is there to really springboard what could be a potentially special year next season for Auburn. You know, if you start looking at the talent they have, you're probably losing Seth Williams, but you still have Tank Bigsby, who's going to be one of the best running backs in the nation. You know, an offensive line is gelling more. I just think Auburn really needs to establish whatever culture it's going to have going into the offseason and beyond. So these games are very important for the Tigers in particular. I mentioned Athens. Let's go ahead and move to Georgia. Mississippi State coming to Athens. It's going to be a slim roster, which I think is really a theme in the SEC for a few different teams for the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Also, likely seeing some different quarterback play from Georgia. Coach, we talked about it on UGA Sports Live on Tuesday that Georgia needs to play some football games, and this is quite the opportunity to kind of figure out Georgia's identity offensively.
Yeah, I mean, you look at how long they've been practicing every team in the country since July 13th, really. I mean, when it could do, you know, supervised stuff and played six games here, and it's November 20th. I mean, you know, 19th, 20th. So, it's just any way you look at it, it's just you got to take the situation and make the best of it. And from Georgia's standpoint, everybody wants them to be better than they actually are right now. And, you know, the reality is hopefully with all the younger players they're developing, they'll really be there. But at the same time, you got a lot to play for. You got to play these last four games and you get a lot of reps with your younger players every time you practice, but you got to keep them, you know, hungry and keep them from getting COVID and do all these things. So we'll see. Quarterback wise, looks like we're going to finally see Daniels, and everybody hopes that he's the man. I trust Kirby and Munkin and feel like that he isn't the man, or he would have been playing right now. So maybe he'll develop now and we'll see what happens. So good luck to him.
Brent, you and I did a lot of preview and film review from JT Daniels' time at USC. What do you know about him? What have you seen on tape and in your data? And then how do you think that fits into what Todd Munkin wants to do?
Well, the arm strength is unquestionable. He has a live absolute. There's a reason he was a five-star, top five type recruit because of the arm strength. But obviously in his year and time frame that they was at USC, he turned the ball over, had more turnover-worthy plays that we at Pro Football Focus track had as many as anybody in the country. I think it was third most in the FBS during his time frame that he was there. So it's, you know, ability versus actual execution. I'm just excited to see it just as much as anything, just because we've seen what Stetson's done. We've seen what DeJuan's done. It's not provided consistent enough offensive perspective. So as much as anything, you want to see it. And when you think about college football as a whole, and really any level of football, youth football, the NFL, all of it. We see so many videos on Twitter of breaking down little tiny tidbits of technique and plays and play design. defensive design. What are you doing here against this look? All that. And the game is as simple as, do you have a quarterback you can win with or not? It's really that simple. And when you look at teams that have it, they're sort of thriving. If you don't, you're trying to find any way, shape, or form to do that. But this game to me, though, is as much about Georgia's defense as it is about Georgia's offense. Because we have no clue what, you know, JT Daniels is going to look like. You haven't seen him in over a year. But Georgia's defense, when you look at what, you know, because of Mississippi State's propensity to throw the ball, they only have 65 rushing attempts the entire season. So, you know, they have seven guys with at least 27 targets. Georgia has two. So this is they're going to chuck it all game long. And I just want to see how Georgia defends it, because Coach has talked about this on previous podcasts with how teams are rushing three, dropping eight. And when you look at what's interesting about that is, so that sort of narrative, I went and looked into the data. So in terms of Mississippi State's offensive line performance, they're actually pretty solid when teams, you know, they're really young on the offensive line. They've struggled there overall. They're really solid when teams just rush three. They're middle of the pack in terms of pass blocking efficiency and grade when teams just rush three and drop eight. But their quarterbacks have 10 interceptions in those situations. But when teams rush four or more, so when teams bring defensive line, when teams bring blitz, they're getting a pressure almost 50% of snaps. But the quarterbacks only have four interceptions in those situations. So what does Georgia do defensively? Do they rush three, drop eight, play sort of conservatively, eyes on QB, let all the met, you know, because there's going to be a lot of mesh routes, a lot of air raid principles within what obviously it's Mike Leach's offense. Or do they be more aggressive, consistently bring four like they normally do, four or five, and try to just create havoc through pressure? That to me is going to be the most fascinating piece of this game.
Coach, what would you do?
Yeah, I think the prescription that I've seen everybody that's beaten them and going back to Washington over the last 6 years is the best thing is just keep the ball in front of you, make them execute, and not give them any big plays. You know, it's tempting to pressure them, but they throw a myriad of plays behind the line, a lot of picks, a lot of bubble screens and all that, and make you tackle in space. I can see Georgia using five and six defensive backs and just make these guys out execute us. But, you know, I guess that's a good stat on the pressure. But you look at the teams that really have baffled them all year, Arkansas, Kentucky, goes on to even Vanderbilt. You know, they got 17 points early but got no yardage rushing. But I think Kirby and Lanning will come up with something. But, you know, we're traditionally not a team that drops a lot, but I could see us doing it against these guys. And you got to win the game. And, you know, the offense is going to play against the defense. It takes a lot of chances. Their defense runs a lot of stunts, plays a lot of man coverage. So hopefully we'll have our George Pickens back that can help everybody else. But it's going to be an interesting game just because Georgia hasn't played in a couple of weeks and neither has State.
And I think a lot of the attention is going to be on JT Daniels and Georgia's passing game. I think what you're going to see, especially with Nathan Pickering opting out for Mississippi State, their defensive line is thin. Almost too thin to play, to be quite honest. And I think Georgia would be silly not to use its offensive line and Zamir White and some of their running attack and just run right at Mississippi State and see what happens with that. I think – yeah, sure, Daniels will have some passing opportunities, maybe Stetson if he ends up playing. But I think Georgia runs the ball, and I think they do it very effectively.
Yeah, I agree with that. We need to – you know, our identity right now is not like what Brent referred to, hey, you know, outscoring people. At this point, the next four teams we play, we ought to be able to defend and, you know, play within ourselves. And, you know, at the same time, if it presents itself, open up and hit some of those big plays.
We did have a coaching change in the SEC since our last show, and that's our next game to feature. That's Missouri and South Carolina. Will Muschamp out for the Gamecocks. Mike Bobo now the interim head coach for South Carolina. Also of note, Connor Shaw, the former quarterback for South Carolina, he was in an off-the-field kind of player development role. He now gets pulled on the field interim basis and a guy that I've met a couple times to really like. So I'm glad to get that opportunity for him, for Connor Shaw, because no one bleeds South Carolina like he does. And, you know, when South Carolina was rocking, he was at the center of it. Let's go to Brent with this one. Missouri and South Carolina. Again, two rosters that I think are decimated after so many Gamecocks on defense opted out this week.
Yeah, and I think the theme of this game is a word I saw used when I was looking at who is actually available to play, specifically for both teams, is moonlighting. Because when you look at Missouri's roster and some of the things they talk about, and then South Carolina's now with losing, you know, the two cornerbacks, the two starting corners opting out, which, by the way, you gave up 50-something points last week to Ole Miss, and those two guys played. So, you know, that's not a good thing for South Carolina. But I saw, you know, wide receivers are taking, you know, that are lower on the depth chart are getting some reps at cornerback. Offensive linemen lower on the depth chart getting reps on the defensive line. So a lot of moonlighting involved with each roster. Missouri hasn't played in almost 3 weeks. I saw where it's this will be the biggest span between games for them since 9/11, since right around 9/11. So almost 20 years since they've gone this long between games. So it's one of those where who's available, who plays well, and it's much like we talked about earlier with Tennessee and Auburn. I actually kind of feel better about Missouri's quarterback situation than I do South Carolina's in this game.
Yeah, the thing is going to be South Carolina has been able to run the ball pretty effectively. Missouri's pretty good against the run. And morale, I mean, how's the morale at South Carolina? I mean, you lose your leader. Some kids decide to opt out, which that's their prerogative. You know, they've lost five games. They got three left. And both these guys got really good chances going pro. So, but morale's a big key here. Mike Bobo knows how to handle adversity. I mean, he had a major injury in college himself. He came back and had a great career playing for me. And he was close to getting it going there at Colorado State, but they never could get the defense to mesh with the offense. Now he goes there hoping he can get their offense going, and now they've given up, you know, all these points the last 3 weeks, and their offense has really played, you know, pretty good. They missed their turn a couple of times, but you know, it's just a question of both these teams are really fragile right now. I can understand the hard job both of them have trying to get their team ready to go, because not only not knowing, you know, who's going to play, but how you're going to play. So it's going to be, plus you got to wait around all day before you play. So this could be a pick'em game. One of these teams could really give it away and really make the other team feel better.
I will say, in watching South Carolina, it's a bit of an artifact when you look out and see a fullback out there quite often for Mike Bobo's offense, which I quite enjoy seeing. I know it's a piece of the game that is going away in some ways, but man, South Carolina's running attack, Brent, has been really effective.
Very much so. Harris, I mean, absolutely dominated Ole Miss, which a lot of people have, but still completely there. And I think he's now in the top 15 in the nation in terms of grade. But you know, the opt-out thing is very interesting. And I think one of the things about it, and I think you're going to see more of it over the next week or two, is I think if the season started normally, like in terms of, you know, we started late August, early September, as we normally would have, I don't think you would see the opt-outs like you are now. Because we're getting that, you know, we're so much further into the calendar, and the draft is, you know, closer and closer, and that window to prepare for the draft is smaller now. I think that'll be as much as the reason that people opt out as much as anything to focus on that. And obviously the situation in South Carolina is a little different, but the calendar has affected that as much as anything. But yes, South Carolina with Harris, Fenwick, Shai Smith making plays, you know, had the great one-handed catch against Ole Miss. So, you know, they have a chance, but can they get consistent quarterback play?
A good point on the calendar, I think, because this would be the last week of the regular season in most seasons. And now we're looking at 3 to 4 weeks, depending on how it shakes out. We'll just have to see. Let's move on to Kentucky and Alabama. Obviously, the Crimson Tide with hopes of an SEC and a national championship in their future. Coach, can Kentucky play keep away enough? Because I can't imagine they're going to be trying to do anything quickly. I think they'll use as much clock as they possibly can.
Yeah, you know, they got the recipe with their offense if they can handle the front of Alabama. Alabama hadn't shown me the defensive that we thought maybe they'd have this year. So, you know, they've had a lot of situations where they're not three and out. Their team doesn't do that a lot, but they've improved the last couple games for sure. But Kentucky's recipe's got to be keep it away from them. Quarterback runs are good against Alabama. They have a hard time. They like to play man under, and they're going to have a hard time corralling Wilson. They just got to stay ahead of the sticks like they did against Auburn. But the thing they didn't do against Auburn was, you know, score in the red zone, and they had a couple critical turnovers. But this Kentucky team is another one that perplexes me. You never know what you're going to get. And then defensively, as much zone as they play, they'll make Alabama work for it, but Alabama will run the ball on them too. So, you know, play action pass should be there for Jones. And, you know, his arm's probably as fresh as it's been since he was playing junior high, because they haven't played in 3 weeks. So I look for Alabama to win, but I don't think they'll run up and down the field on Kentucky like they do some teams, because Kentucky doesn't play that much man coverage. Do you think, Brent?
No, I agree. And Kentucky's going to make one of the next two teams they play. They got Florida next. They're going to make one of these two games just an absolute dogfight of a type game, I think. I mean, the spread for this game is 30. That's amazing when you think about it. But Kentucky has the recipe, like you said, Coach, that can keep the ball away from Alabama. Offensive line, they're still getting dominant play from the offensive line. Chris Rodriguez, who's from McDonough, Georgia, I think I heard recently that he is now the second highest graded running back in the entire FBS. Last week, he averaged over 8 yards after contact per attempt. He's right at almost 5 yards. Or a little over 4 yards in terms of after contact or attempt. So he is just making people miss, and also, you know, just bouncing off of folks left and right.
He's got really good balance.
One of the things you talk about Alabama's defense. Yes, he does. And he's low to the ground. But one of the things about Alabama's defense that's interesting, they still have one of the highest coverage grades in the nation. And it's one of the things that they've done since Minka Fitzpatrick left. He was really the last. But since Minka Fitzpatrick left, they're the star position in the Saban defense. And it's one thing that they've done differently that from Georgia and Kirby Smart and Dane Lanning have done is they've taken that true nickel slot corner and made it more of a cornerback as opposed to someone who is a 200 to 205 pound, you know, can play physical play in the run game. They've made it more of the 6 foot, 180 pound, go play and go cover people all the time. And Malachi Moore, true freshman, played 410 snaps, one of the highest graded true freshmen in the nation, and in that slot corner role has really helped their defense because they still have the traditional outside guys that can cover. They have Surtain still, and they've done that over these years, but truly evolving into the, you know, sort of knowing the passing game and evolving the slot corner position is where Alabama's sort of stepped it up defensively over the years.
I'm going to give you a guy on the other side of the ball that I think is just interesting. The NBA draft this week had me thinking about this, because for all the NFL draft nerds out there, I look at a guy like Devontae Smith, who probably coming into the season was a late first round. I mean, obviously a talented guy, but just with his production, especially with Waddle being out now, can just keep on rising up draft boards. And that could be a potential top 10 guy with the productivity I think he's going to be seeing from Mac Jones. So watch Devontae Smith, really strong. I really don't know how you cover him if he runs the right route and if it's an accurate throw.
Are you teasing your bold prediction there?
My bold prediction does come from this game.
Not that.
It's going to be maybe a backhanded compliment to Kentucky. I don't know. We'll have to see on that. Let's move on to LSU and Arkansas, a couple teams that, you know, historically, this is one of those games that it doesn't matter what the record is. These two teams just play really tough and competitive. But, Coach, I look at LSU's quarterback situation, and it's a pretty bleak deal with Miles Brennan still being injured. They have TJ Finley. They have Max Johnson, neither of which, last time we saw LSU, looked like anything that you could write home about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a tough situation for Max being thrown to the wolves there against Auburn, although I thought he did some good things. And we talked about it the week of the game that, you know, TJ would either be outhouse or penthouse against Auburn, and he just didn't work out for him. He had a couple of tip passes too. But, you know, teams have a chance to scout you, use defenses that get you confused and all that. And I'm sure Barry Odom will run a lot of different looks on these guys. But this looks to me like personnel-wise – just like Florida or Arkansas, they got better players, you know, 1 through 55. But just the morale and the way they're thinking about themselves, you know, Arkansas really has a good feel for their team morale, and they you know, got that chance to go get to 500 on their season and all that. So you worry about LSU with all the off-field issues that are happening and all the allegations, who's the quarterback going to be, all that stuff. But the people that picked these games at LSU as an underdog, and now they got them as a favorite. So a lot of people must be betting on LSU.
Well, Brent, one thing that's confusing to me about LSU is that some of the same linebackers that played some solid football for the Tigers in somewhat reserve roles, I understand, but like some of the same players that for Dave Aranda were part of a national championship team on defense just seems so confused on defense right now. And I don't know if that's the coaching change or if it's just lack of buy-in. Their defensive woes at LSU, maybe some of the worst in the league, just confuse me.
Very much so. And I think a lot of it is just youth. I mean, even, you know, when you had last year with Aranda, you had Stingley as a true freshman playing great. He's still a true freshman who just said, hey, go cover this guy in man coverage all the time. And then you come into a different system with Bo Pelini, and you have youth in different places, and you have literally everywhere in terms of their defense. It makes changes for things. I will say with this game, Coach, I think, said it best in terms of identity. Arkansas really knows who they are. And that, as much as anything, I think will, you know, granted the betting line has sort of favored in LSU's way, and maybe just have a, you know, rally the troops, everybody's against this kind of feel for the Tigers this week. But I think Arkansas just knows who they are. They're playing at home again, and, you know, we'll have some fans who will be there and be loud and be very sort of proud of what they're seeing, I think. And the quarterback plays a big difference. And I think, you know, what you're going to get from Arkansas right now as opposed to LSU.
Don't discount the element of fun when it comes to this. When I watch Arkansas, that's a team that looks like it's having fun. And maybe Yes. It's because the expectations were so much lower. I don't know the reasons. But when you watch LSU, it does seem like it can be a bit of a slog sometimes. And again, the defense just is playing at a level that most any offense can score points on them. Typically is the case against Vanderbilt as well. And frankly, guys, I don't have that much analysis for Florida and Vanderbilt. I just don't see this being a very competitive football game. Coach, any hope for Vanderbilt, even though they scored a decent amount of points on Kentucky?
You know, Vandy played them good in the past. They've had some pretty good games against Florida. Actually, we were ahead of them, you know, and Florida had to come back in the second half. But right now, Florida is just on a different level, throwing the ball, catching it, and very confident. And, you know, their defense made some stops the other night and did what they had to do. So, but this is a big mismatch unless Florida turns it over. But, you know, they're due to have some drops or some bad passes. I mean, this guy's on fire, as good as anybody I've ever seen on the run he's had as far as completion percentage. And, you know, just it'd be hard for Vanderbilt to be competitive, I think.
Brent, is Kyle Trask the Heisman favorite right now?
He's up there. He's very much up there. And he's playing, like Coach said, he's playing at a level that we just haven't seen. Well, we saw it last year with Joe Burrow, but in terms of position at Florida, you haven't seen it in a few years. So, you know, what is it, six straight games, I think, is his streak right now of at least four touchdown passes. That's one that's interesting for me this week. That's one that's interesting for me this week. But, yes, this is a total mismatch. There's a reason there's a 31-point spread in this game.
We can move on to bold predictions because I think yours comes from this game, right, Brent?
Yes, and I think because of the mismatch, I think – I mean, what's interesting about this, I think his streak ends this week. I think He gets three, and they get a couple rushing, and they're up, you know, really, really big, and you see a lot of Emory Jones. And it's not so much that – he's not going to be able to. I think it's just opportunity maybe is not as much this week for Kyle Trask. So I think his streak comes – that would be my bold prediction, that his streak comes to an end this week.
So then I can pop up on Twitter that Brent says that Trask's streak ends versus Vanderbilt. Maybe not for the right reasons.
That's the bold part of it, right? Against Vandy.
I'll get to mine in a second. I did want to mention there is one cancellation or postponement of an SEC game this week. That's Ole Miss and Texas A&M. Texas A&M probably needs to be on a football field as well, considering what the future may hold. So that's probably not where Jimbo wants to be, just staying in practice again. I'll give you my bold prediction, and then I'll come to you for yours, Coach. I go back to Kentucky and Alabama. And I think the Wildcats, and I'm saying this as a whole, so not just the defense necessarily, but as a whole, I think Kentucky holds Alabama to under 35 points. And that happens because Kentucky moves the football offensively and runs every second off the clock that they can. This is a classic high school football where you know you're overmatched and just try to expire the clock. And if it ends up being, you know, a bit of a blowout still, I'm not going to say that they cover necessarily, but I'm going to say that Alabama – gets held under 35 points. Now that may mean that it's 34 to nothing. I have no idea. We'll find out. Coach.
That's a pretty bold prediction. That could happen though, if they keep the ball away from them. I'm just going to say that Tennessee is going to scare the heck out of Auburn. I don't know if they'll win the game, but I see this game is going to be a tight fit game. Tennessee's got to lay it out there on the line. They got nothing to lose. Now they going to go for it. Jim Chaney's a really good game planner, and you know, he's gone against Steele a lot, and of course Pruitt's gone against Gus and that team a lot. So I think they've had a week to get ready. I don't know that they'll win the game, but I think they're going to scare the heck out of them.
Well, you give me just the perfect transition to put you in a tough position, because now it's time for our picks of the three games. And I'm going to put you right back there, Coach. I know you said Tennessee scares Auburn, but is it enough, Tennessee or Auburn?
What are the other two games? Because I'm going to have to pick an upset here to get one.
Yeah, so the three games we're going to pick are Tennessee, Auburn, LSU, Arkansas, and then Missouri and South Carolina.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Tennessee as just an upset. I don't know why. I mean, everybody thinks Auburn will win. They probably will, but I'm going to pick the Vols.
I'm going to stick with Auburn. I just think that Bo Nix, you go with the better quarterback. I'm going to the Brent Rollins school of follow the quarterback.
I agree. I think Auburn sort of – but I like what Coach said, and I think this is very much that game where coin flip, possibly be a coin flip game in the end, but I do think Auburn wins.
Good point, though, Coach, that probably the most marquee victory of Jeremy Pruitt's tenure at Tennessee happened at Auburn. Mm-hmm. And so that's a tough place to win, too. And so that could be what gets the wheels back on track for the Tennessee Volunteers. Let's move to LSU and Arkansas. I'll go first on this one. Again, if you follow the quarterback situation, Felipe Franks is playing solid football. And I think that, you know, LSU is just going to struggle a little bit more offensively than it has to. And their defense can't stop anybody, Brent. I just don't see how they do it. So I go Arkansas.
I would agree. I'm going to go Arkansas in this game just because I said a few weeks ago that I think they're at least that they get to 500, and they need this game to get to 500. And because of who they have remaining the next couple games in their schedule, because they still have to play Bama. So I think they do get this game at home, and Arkansas gets the victory.
Coach?
I'm going to go with the Jimmies and Joes instead of the X's and O's. I think that LSU's got more players, and they're going to have some one-on-one situations they can take advantage of, and hopefully they play a little more zone on defense. But I'm pulling for Arkansas. I want Arkansas to win for Coach Pittman and that team, but I'm going with LSU.
Coach Pittman will be back for this game, yes?
I think so.
Yeah. I had not seen that for sure, but I hope he is, because I know he didn't enjoy watching from his pool house. I know that's for sure.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't have let Kendall Briles run that trick play on 4th-and-1, maybe just try to get the first down. I mean, hey, it would work good if it hit it, but that's what happens. It's either outhouse or penthouse when you run a 4th-and-1, and he picked the wrong guy to throw to. But I'm a lot more for traditional in a game like that. If you're going to go for it, just make the first down. Don't try to win the game on it. Don't you agree with that, Brent?
And that was a big play in that game. It was a turning point because shortly thereafter, Florida scores again, and the game kind of just got out of whack.
Brent, I'm going to stick with you on the final pick, Missouri and South Carolina. I don't know if this is Jimmy's and Joe's or X's and O's, or if it's just taking off your socks and shoes and counting how many players can be on the field. If you can play a football game with 106 players, They may test it.
Flip a coin. That's Missouri's favored. Yeah, I'm going to go with Missouri. I really – there's no feel. There's no vibe. There's no – there. I'm just – let's go Missouri.
Coach?
I'm going with Mike Bobo. Just I feel like their offense will keep the ball away from Missouri, and they'll find a way to get a couple stops there. You know, I'm pulling hard for Mike to get the victory there, but I'm probably wrong. So you go ahead and pick Missouri, and then that one of us will be 3-0, and the other one will be 0-3. That's for sure.
That's exactly what I'm doing. So me and Brent have all the same picks, and Coach, you're opposite on all of them. So either Coach is going to tie for the lead, or this is going to be a wrap. So this is a bit of a Hail Mary from Coach Donnan.
Yeah, I'm going with the underdog.
But the thing is,
hey, underdog at home, at least.
I think you could be right on all of those, because 100%. Other than Alabama and Florida's passing game, I think everything else in the conference can change every week.
Flip coins.
You know, and Georgia's, you know, when Georgia's healthy on defense, I do think that that's a bit of a step up, you know, among other things. Well, guys, I'm just glad that we've had another week of college football to talk about, because, you know, it does seem perilous at some stages, and hopefully, you know, by the time we've finished recording this and people listen to it, there aren't more cancellations. But, you know, we'll see what happens from here. A lot of these players need some football games to play. And Brent, any final thoughts?
No, that's the biggest thing. You want to see games played. I think there's been 400 and something FBS games this year. Hey, we didn't know we were going to get any. We got that many. Let's keep getting as many as we can. We love football. We love watching. We love breaking it down. Let's keep having as much of it as we can.
Remind you that you can hear from me and Rodney DeBolsey and Coach Donnan on our UGA Sports Watch Along show that will start about 7:25 Saturday night. If you want to hear live commentary from us and have Coach Donnan tell you what's going to happen before it happens in Georgia and Mississippi State. Coach, any final thoughts for this week before we wrap?
Just glad to have the show. Looking forward to Saturday night, see what Georgia can do at quarterback, and watch a lot of these games all day long, but glad we had another show.
That Watch Along show will be right here on this YouTube channel. It's also on our Facebook and Twitter pages, and you can always contact us there. Thanks for listening to Around the League from UGASports.com. For Brent Rollins and Jim Donnan, I am Dane Young. We will talk to you next week.